Gigi, Mr. Kabani Zulu, who has been appointed in March 2014. I don't know if he understands the joke, but that's what the PSC report was saying, that you've been appointed in March 2014, sir. So we would understand if there are areas that don't understand how to report on. You are still very new in this department, so we will bear with you. We're going to hand over to the DG. He will introduce his team, and then they will proceed then to the report itself. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements, honorable members of the committee, good afternoon of the day. We will be presenting as expected, and I will start by introducing the team that is with me today. My name is Tamane Zulu. I'm the Director General for the Department of Human Settlements. Shall we?
Good afternoon. My name is Philip Chauke, Chief Director for Marketing and Policy, acting as the DG now for PPM.
My name is Nyame Kombengo. I'm acting CFO.
Good afternoon. My name is Cindy Silongo. I'm the CEO.
Good afternoon. I'm Mr. Ukhomanyama, Director, Enterprise Architect. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Martin Mapisa. I'm GDG responsible for policy and military trends.
Good afternoon. My name is Tepito Moloi, Chief Director, Regulatory Compliance Services.
Good day, everybody. My name is Apela Mashabane, Team Chief Director, Internal Audit Risk Management and Sustainable Verification.
Good afternoon. My name is Wanda Ngosi. I'm the Chief Director of the Office of the Accounting Officer.
Good day, everybody. Milele Khaba, Assistant to the Director General.
Let's get everybody that is not a member of the Portfolio Committee to link us to.
Good afternoon, Chair, Portfolio Committee members. My name is Sharon Horton. I'm in Ministry.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Swazita Tai from the Ministry.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Mbulelo Nceda, PLO, Deputy Minister.
Good afternoon. My name is Miranda in the Deputy Minister's Office.
Thank you very much. Let's go to my right-hand side.
Good afternoon. My name is Degin Konyane, the Office of the DG.
Good afternoon, my name is Zani Gangabon from PNG.
Good afternoon, all. I'm Daima Hota from PMG.
Good afternoon, I'm Martin Piron from PNG.
Thank you very much, MG. This is a setting at the back. Can you introduce yourself, sir?
I'm an assistant to Honorable Mzapo.
Honorable Tebongwana. Can you please take the baton off? Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Everybody that is in the house, I'm going to hand over straight away to the DG to go straight to the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the opportunity presented to the Department of Human Settlements to reflect on its annual report for the period 2013 to March 2014. Our structure of the presentation will be to do a very broad overview of the departmental performance, which I will do, which covers some high-level areas of the things that in this particular year under review we have done as a department or rather performed. will then focus specifically on the performance of the department itself in terms of our annual performance plans and targets that were set and how the department has liberated or performed in those specific areas. One of the key areas obviously relates to the departmental expenditure versus the performance targets. As you all know, that department is also part of the outcome-based approach and outcome aids to increase the quality of life for sustainable human settlements. We'll then look into the broad HS sector performance in terms of the communication outreach programs that we've done, and then focus mainly on the delivery agreement, which is outcome aim that I've made specific reference to. And most importantly, I would also like to look into how we've contributed to job creation during this year under review, and also to focus on the accreditation of municipalities, which was one of the programs that we are running under the year that we are reviewing. Also, part of this particular exercise is to look into financial issues, and our acting CFO will deliberate on those issues. And also the responses that we have adopted in terms of the audited outcomes and action plan that we have put in place from time to time to deal with issues of auditing within the establishment. Here, just to go straight, honorable members, to the overview, 2013 was one of the years that were beginning to challenge us in terms of our mandate, taking cognizance of the mandate that was elevated for the department, particularly with regard to the government efforts to provide shelter as a socio-economic right. As we all know, that government has elevated our responsibility to that of human settlements, and to look into this mandate much more broadly than to simply provide housing for our people. We then guided our departments, which is mainly provinces, in terms of beginning to embrace the principles that have been outlined in our new mandate, or rather elevated mandate, and also to put more emphasis on integrated planning and project implementation and synergy deploying funding through collaboration and coordination. And as you all know, that provinces are mainly our delivery agents as a national department. Most of our responsibility is to distribute funds and make sure that it's done within the policy framework that the government has set for us as a Department of Human Settlements. This is part of what we did at national level by introducing a PMU unit, which is now up and running, to provide capacity support and policy guidance to different agents that are responsible for the implementation of our work. One of the areas that we focused mainly from a policy point of view was the Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program, which was meant to make sure that we improve the access of mortgage finance for people who are in need of housing, thus increasing access to housing for finance and to provide their shelter and basic services, and reduce the burden that Human Settlements Department across the country is having in ensuring that we provide shelter for our people. Various engagements were then held during this period, in particular with the private sector, different companies, as well as employers of different important stakeholders, particularly in the mining sector, with the purpose of encouraging that some investments must also be for the purpose of creating access to affordable housing finance. But also the National Department, together with Treasury, took also an initiative to introduce the national support informal settlements for the purpose of ensuring that we begin to assist municipalities. Our assessment indicated that from an informal settlements point of view, some work needs to be done, and the National Treasury, together with the Department of Human Settlements, embarked on a very vigorous program to assist various municipalities with their MIG, as well as to ensure that whatever is happening across the provinces is linked into the work that we're doing. We also put much more effort to try and improve on the RIG program, which we have been doing since 2009, with the introduction of RIG program to be handled and managed by the department. And some of the funds were transferred to municipalities to implement this program as directed by National Treasury. The management of the SDG grant continued to receive support and devolution of power to the local state of government, and this program has been running pretty much well, with some challenges here and there, which we have been managing between the affected metros and the local department. But the fundamental purpose for this program, as we all know, was to try and unlock the block projects as a result of lack of infrastructure in various big metros to assist them with the supporting structure and also to supplement the funds that they have in dealing with the provision of basic services, especially on projects which are linked to human settlements development. The other area which has been a very interesting area is our role internationally, and we have continued to participate with UN Habitat Program, and we have made an input as a country from human settlements perspective. And recently, as we all know, which has happened this year, which is coming from the previous year, we have also presented ourselves to the UN and also provided a perspective of how we think human settlements throughout the continent and the world should be managed. And we also thank the leadership of the chair, as she was part of the delegation that went to UN recently to present a very comprehensive document that has been put together by different stakeholders led by the Department of Human Settlements. We have also hosted various delegations, like Angola's ministries, on matters of construction, and we also signed a memorandum of understanding on cooperation in the field of human settlements. There's a relationship that we are beginning to create between ourselves and Angola in the area of human settlements development. We have also made strides in terms of the bill on rental housing, with some fundamental changes to make this area to work much better, and all of that has been done in this particular year under review. We have also created a new policy to deal effectively with the backyard rental program, and that was developed and approved by the DAS team as we seek, and we will be very much willing to present the outcome of that policy to this committee. This RU policy, which is meant to begin to improve the hostel situation in different parts of our country, has been adjusted to provide a much more vigorous approach in dealing with hostel management in countries as a whole, particularly in areas that have been affected by the existence of hostels during the apartheid system. We have embarked on a directive to fill the vacant positions to address the challenge of skills and also to begin to understand that our mandate has changed and new skills are required to assist with our elevated mandate as a department. I must indicate here that we've been battling a little bit with this particular area, but we have made an effort to try and fill all the existing vacancies with some challenges, as some of the skills that we require are very scarce in the market, but we have made some progress. And the COO, when she presents, she will reflect exactly at what percentage do we stand at the moment and what efforts are we continuously making to try and improve on our vacant rates as a department. Honorable Chair, at this point, I would request that I invite our Chief Operations Officer to focus specifically on the performance of the department itself and reflect on the targets that we have achieved and how have we performed from a departmental point of view in the year under review, which is 2014, with your permission. So.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Chief. In summary, during the year under review 2013-14, the department achieved in summary, the department for the year under review achieved 79% on its planned targets, and we did not. This is another indicator, person, that it was an improvement if we compare it with the previous financial year. There was a 22% improvement in this current financial year. When you unpack 79%, it means the department has 126 targets, which we had planned for ourselves, and 99 targets were achieved, whilst 27 targets were not achieved. We have brought with ourselves those specific targets that we did not achieve. That's information that we can leave for the portfolio committee if we are allowed to do so. The next slide, this is the demonstration of how the department performed in terms of the departmental structure, starting from the administration and all the branches. As the department purposely, we've got six branches. At the end column there is an indication of how each branch performed, which talks to the 79%. With your permission, Chairperson, maybe I might not read all of them, but it sums up the 79%. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, that we thought that it was fit for us to present this information in terms of the departmental structure, but also this information, we'll come back to it under finance
where the acting chief financial officer will be presenting now the financial position of the department in terms of the budget structure. The DG asked me briefly to touch on the issues of the vacancies. Chairperson, at the end of the financial year, our vacancy rate was standing at 19%. That was also, again, an improvement from the 31% that we had as the vacancies when we compare it with the previous financial year. Let me also indicate that so far, as the DC has indicated, that this is the area that is receiving the focus within the department. Currently, our vacancy rate is sitting at 14%, and we are trying harder to make sure that by the end of this quarter, which we should have achieved, or at the end of this financial year, we should have at least be within the 10% vacancy rate that is in line with the DPSA. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair, we'll continue to the human settlement sector performance. That was just covering only the departmental performance. Now we want to go wider to the...
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. We're going to take you by business unit as they contribute to a total portfolio of the department. In terms of communication, we participated in all the outreach programs that were led by the ministry, which are from a department side are led by the DG. And this involved visiting various committees and doing visits to homes, as well as conducting better investigation on issues that were raised from time to time. This was done in collaboration with the municipality and the provincial department of human settlement, mainly because they are our stakeholder partners that we go to communities. Public engagement included exhibitions during the annual show, which we do annually. The Pretoria show, which comes later in the year, as well as the South African Housing Coalition breaks and the press conference. But 4,500 generic publications were distributed to GCIS Library in Parliament and to some service center in Mpumalanga and Limpopo in their regional languages. That is Swati, mainly in Mpumalanga, but also Sotho, Venda, and Pedi in Limpopo. Door-to-door campaigns were done and publications were handed over to members of the communities during the campaign, such as the one that was held on the 6th of August in Ofiorin and one on the 2nd of October in the Rato Park in Kimberley. Community invitations were also hosted by the minister and the deputy ministers across the country. And other outreach programs are done by officials during the youth days, which we do on an annual basis, as well as the women days that we conduct annually. During another outreach program that involves Spanish Asian, as we're responsible for this program until recently, Spanish Asian held in Ward 5 at Makara in Kailisha on the 25th of April 2013. We also launched a Walmart Link Fleece project on the 9th of May 2013. This is one program that DG has indicated was not receiving attention and had to put more effort into it. Community engagement, we also engaged on the budget vote in June on the 22nd of May 2013. As you know, Chairperson, we always treat budget speeches, budget vote by such engagement. In terms of the strategy of the human settlement strategy, Chairperson, the draft central reference for the Green Paper has been developed, and the rental housing strategy framework was also developed, and the discussion paper about the affordability of rental housing, as well as the discussion paper about the subsidies in rental housing has also been put forth as issues that need to be consulted about. Draft sector-wise reporting indicators have also been developed. Consultations on the draft for 2019 MTSS or strategic plan across the sector was concluded. Draft evaluation report submitted to the technical working group for comment. In terms of planning, also within the same branch, the draft solution for the review of the program for human settlement chapter of the municipal IDP has been developed. progress report on the support rendered to municipalities on the assessment of the housing chapter in IP process has also been drafted. As you know that we've got housing chapters within the IDPs and we make sure that we work with the municipalities in terms of that. Enhancement, enhanced people housing process. I will just run quickly on this. The finalization of the Human Settlement Policy on community-based housing cooperatives has been done. You know that this issue has always been ascending in terms of formation of housing cooperatives, and we are working with the CEDA, which is the DTI agency responsible for the cooperatives, to try and fast-track that process. DTI has a matter department for that. It's assisting in the intergovernmental coalition committees on cooperatives, because they are the ones to develop the shared policy on cooperatives. The advancement of self-based methodology, also that's an issue. Oversight visits were conducted in the Western Cape, KZN and Northwest provinces to evaluate the implementation of programs and deliver the required PAP capacity development workshops. This is another issue that is critical related to cooperatives, but where people get involved in their own housing solutions. Support to provinces in the upgrading of informal settlement through PHP. In KZN province and Ethiopia specifically, we got involved to evaluate the progress regarding the upgrading of informal settlement, assessing the monitoring evaluation assignment of evaluating the impact of the ESP, and we engaged with the CPUT to discuss the Human Settlement Summit with focus on alternative technology. I think I can indicate, even though it will come under the outcome aid report, that we have covered so many municipalities in terms of ESP to date, getting capacity to do municipalities.
Just one moment, sir. Honorable Margaret, can you sit here for one moment? I have an urgent document.
Thank you, Chairperson. As DJ has indicated, we are involved deeply in South Africa in international environment. The department led a team of government officials and academics to the 7th World Event Forum in Medellin, Colombia. And the upcoming support of that has been circulated, and it is the one that led to or infused in the National Development Plan in terms of what we took into Colombia. The leading the country preparations for the third United Nations Conference on Human Settlement and Sustainable Urban Development Habitat in 2016. We have technical teams that have done such groundwork in terms of preparing the other stakeholder countries, including within the region. The finalization of national report on achievements in the last 20 years, what our remaining challenges are, and what we hope to have included in the new urban agenda to be adopted at Habitat 3. As you correctly understand, Chairperson, the work that we do as a country is the work that we take forth to the UN Habitat Agenda, or Habitat 3, which is forthcoming. In terms of stakeholder and HGR program, the department has successfully launched the Bonovia Integrated Project during April 2014. That's one of our major flagship projects as a department and as a country. The HubSpot project was successfully held over from the China government to the Southern government. This is a project that we started almost 6 years ago in HubSpot Mpumalanga, funded by the Chinese government. A memorandum of understanding was signed with Council of Science and Research. This is a council that helps us in terms of innovative technology within our human settlement base. Preparations for the National Government Baker Awards were undertaken, and on an annual basis, we hold these conferences, these awards. We held one during the reporting period. We also held one recently outside the reporting period at Galatari. Stakeholder and IGR programs. The sector engagement through the national workshop on 26th of June was held, and further solicited written inputs to be included in the report before it is submitted to Cabinet for approval in quarter two. We also held on the fourth quarter provincial, municipal, and entities performance review sessions at the end of May, and have followed up with matters arising from the reviews with the related provinces. This is work that is done on a quarterly basis, where it will bring all the players, provinces, and metros who are receiving grants from us to account for what they are doing with our money, so both funding as well as in terms of non-financial information. Chairperson, we also need to report that we have secured a sponsorship for 105 through our agencies for the youth build special projects, and this is money that is normally used in to promote and support the work that is done during the youth build. I won't go into details in terms of the things about t-shirts and everything that we have done with that money. I think if this year allows, Chairperson, we'll move straight to the next presentation. Thank you. In terms of outcome 8, which is what we had majorly contracted in the last term of government for the 5 years, 2009 up to 2014, April or March. These were the targets, as you remember, the targets we needed to upgrade 400,000 informal or households, and to work towards the target at the end of the 5 year period, which is March 2014, we had delivered or we upgraded 444,780 households, representing an overachievement by 111%. We've got slides, Jefferson, that will give a breakdown of the province as to how we have dealt with that. And maybe because of this achievement, we have increased the target in the new MTSF from above 400,000 in terms of that program. The National Upgrading Support Program, DG alluded to it earlier on. This is a program we use to support municipalities in terms of getting them to develop plans to upgrade their informal settlements. In terms of this, we have also overachieved in that we have achieved 96% of the targeted municipalities, 47 out of 49, and we also had 3 additional ones which was not part of the 49, and we supported them. To date, they have got full technical capacity, working with them, developing plan that will include how those informal settlements shall be upgraded and where they are not feasible because of the material ground condition, how people are going to be relocated to better located land. In terms of rental, Chairperson, we had targets to deliver 8,000 rental, including DRU stock, and in doing so, we're selling 68%, having delivered 53,000 units in terms of that against the 80,000 target. And, well, this slide, this is some of the mitigation issues that we have taken into the new MDSS. And maybe I will recap the fact on areas that we underachieved, that the revision of the current social and rental housing policies is in progress because we did not achieve 100%. As I indicated, we achieved 68% on that. Development of NPS rental policy receiving attention, that's one area that we have never seek to regulate the department. The declaration of additional restructuring zone being attended to, that's the area we're in. We've got 50 areas that we are going to lead as current project areas. Monitoring tool for private rentals to be built into the place. As you know, Jefferson, we don't have currency mechanism to take stock of a rental taking place in areas that are participated by the private sector. Hence, we could not adequately account for the number of rental units that were developed by private sector. So that's the area that is receiving attention. National Department will also undertake to design and cost the costing of higher density housing typologies. We are often critiqued by the department that the urban sprawl is not a solution, and then the whole question of increased urbanization in terms of densification is one area that is receiving attention. There have been studies and and of information that was solicited from other countries where in cities have been densified. I just need to indicate that in terms of one of the targets, which was the acquisition of municipalities, I won't go into the details, but we have municipalities that have been accredited both at level 1 as well as metro that are currently at level 2. We haven't, Chairperson, assigned anyone at level 3. And this is, has been a subject of the recent MINEC, wherein both our MINEC as well as the MINEC with COCA and water and sanitation dealt with this matter extensively on the pros and cons of it relative to the state of readiness of metros. So I want to go to in terms of land acquisition, Chairperson, we had a target of 6,282 hectares for the MTSF period, and we've surpassed that by delivering land for housing for human purposes to 11,308 hectares, and that is 180% performance in terms of that. However, we did not do well in some of the areas, Jefferson, and we need to declare them to you. The mortgage default insurance fund, which was previously announced by the president, we did not achieve that. It was ought to be 1 billion, and as a line department, we cannot conclude this proposal. We needed treasury to be able to assist us, but given the climate condition of the economy at that time, they were hesitant into doing that. They already had exposure with other agencies, they included FlamRal, and they did not want to take any further exposure at that stage. It's an issue that may be reviewed going forward. In terms of financing individual subsidy, this is one program that is designed to alleviate the problems of gas market people, be it people in low-level government official jobs, as well as people in private sector jobs. It hasn't taken off in a great deal, as it has indicated earlier on, and it is receiving necessary attention. We had a policy review adjustment in terms of this, adjusting the upper limit during the financial year with a view to increasing the take-up of this program. Long-term fixed interest rate instrument is one area that we did not achieve as well. As you recall, Chairperson, this was intended to try and limit the exposure on people taking up mortgage finance by fixing the rate, the interest rate, but we haven't been able to achieve this with the bank. It's also a subject of the summit that we're having this Thursday with among others, the banking association, to be represented prominently in the agenda. This slide covers the types of loans that we had dispersed during the period. This was one area that we needed to increase momentum, but we did not get 100% achievement. Our key institutions that were able to leverage most of the loans were the National Housing Finance Corporation, which has dispersed most of the instrumental loans, I've articulated them, with us during the macro loans for housing support program. Those are the two key departments in terms of DFI linked with the department that were able to assist us in terms of leveraging credit finance in support of human settlement or housing. So in the overall, this institution, DFIs, are operating within the space that is quite to improve the property market. As you know, that this is also one of the three key things currently in terms of our program, the improved property market. It's still a key theme, and we're saying that with adjustment that needs to be done under this protracted discussion with the bank, with the banking institutions, we will be able to address the gas market that has always been an issue for us. The consolidation of the DFIs, Chairperson, involves the integration of the three DFIs that we have in-house. That process started off with us developing a business case in previous financial year. We are not able to conclude the integration, but this is the work that we will be able to conclude possibly in the next 2 years, but within this term of government. Job creation, while dispersing all the capital grant, the CAPEX grant that we have articulated to, the delivery of 48,197 certified, as well as 100,000 houses or 105,000 houses during the period, 40 period, yielded 3,000 employment opportunities to people who otherwise not have gotten employment during the reporting period. And this is in line with government position at the national level. This is another area, Chairperson, wherein we are trying to make our human settlement sector a professional area. And we're doing so by a French scholarship program benefiting almost 347 beneficiaries since the inception, with an annual investment department totaling $9 million per annum. I think this will tap the $10 million mark this year. The Bachelor of Human Settlement Development degree offered by the Nelson Mandela Institute is one of the flagship decrees that we are proud of, although this program started with VET supporting it, but this Mandela is the first one to be able to conceptualize a degree geared at creating capability for the human development sector. Chair for Human Settlement Development and Management, hosted by the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan Municipality, to deliver the body of knowledge in the sector. Cabinet approved the approval of the degree and the chair. This was a milestone for us when Cabinet endorsed and approved the degree as it is geared at assisting us. In terms of key indicators during the repeating period, we want to report the following. The Cabinet project in Malanga, within the jurisdiction of Premier City Municipality, has today delivered 1,788 housing units, while 62 foundations, 7 units being at World Bank level, as well as 186 houses at roof levels. This is one of the flagship projects wherein we did a lot of housing within a limited space. And then 5,500 units were also delivered in Kutong project, with 3,434 completed, 4,976 foundations having been transferred during the reporting period, as well as 4,428 being at World Trade 7. Kutong, as you remember, this is the township that we are relocating because of the geographic condition, and we had to generate, almost create a new city within lightning speed. In the Sweet Water project, which is one of the presidential projects within the jurisdiction of the city of Johannesburg, 1,000 units have been completed and occupied in the adjacent Tulamtoana project. In Dromedaris, which is here in the Western Cape, 924 housing units have been completed and handed over, while in Duncan Village project in the Buffalo City municipalities, 5,354 housing units have been completed. These are all flagship projects that we run. And one that honorable members are aware of is the N2 Gateway within the city of Cape Town, with a total of 11,400 units having been completed, with a further additional 15,000 units planned for the current phase. As you are aware, members, we are back in N2 and would measure at N2 to complete, honorable chairperson, of course, with the support of the committee. In Banimbula project, which we started as a flagship within the Northern Mandela Municipality, we have to date completed over 6,181 units. In the Rafa Park in the Northern Cape, within the municipal jurisdiction of Solvaiki Municipality, 491 units have been completed. In so far as the mining council are concerned, it was first necessary to request funding from National Treasury to the tune of $1.1 billion that was subsequently approved for informal settlement upgrading the identified mining plan. I can confirm that this funding, chairperson, on the 3 years, it will total $2.2 billion, with $290 million set aside for this year to begin with in terms of informal settlement upgrading in the mining towns. And this, can I leave it to the CFO?
I would like to reflect now on the most important part. The usage of the fiscals of the date by the department. I will ask the acting CFO to deal with the financial part and the audited part, and that will conclude our presentation. Thanks.
Deputy, you can proceed, CFO.
Thank you, so I will not get into this first two slides. These first two slides are giving an indication of the MTEF allocation over a four-year period. And I'll just indicate that on this slide, if you look at the pie, you'll see 97.4% on pie, which indicates the biggest program in the department, which is made up of mainly grants and transfer payments. When you look at the bottom chair, you will notice that there is a note there which says grants and transfers to entities constitute 97% of the total allocation. Hence, the biggest portion of that pie. Even this chair, this served, and these are indicative allocations over the MTF period, over a 4-year period. I will not get into it. I will start on this slide. This is a summary of the adjustment budget of the department. The original budget of the department was 28.1 billion. There were rollovers amounting to 120 million. There was an additional adjustment which Treasury gave, which was 44.4 million. And there was a cut during the year of 20 million, giving us an adjusted allocation for the year of 28.2 billion. When you look, Chair, into the adjustment estimate, starting in the first column called rollovers approved, this slide gives a more information on the on that column. The rollovers, there were two rollovers approved by Treasury. The first one was 100.5 million, which was in respect of the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant, the RIG. The second rollover, which was approved, was a 20 million for the Community Schemes Ombud Service and Startup Funding. Next year is the adjustment estimate and other adjustment. The additional adjustment by Treasury of 44 million was in respect of the Human Settlement Development Grant Disaster Relief, which was allocated to the department to be dispersed to various provinces which are affected by the disaster. Later on, Chair, we will look at how that money was actually allocated to various provinces. With regard to the cut, Chair, during the year, Treasury instituted a cut on our budget, and that was a 20 million from the NASP program. There were requirements which were approved by Treasury after the adjustment estimate. You will notice, Chair, that with an adjusted allocation of 28.2 billion, the requirements which did not change the final allocation, but simply moved funding from one branch to the other. To get into more, just give more information on the adjustments or on the requirements. The first requirement was the 28.1 million from other programs to Program 4, which is housing development. And this was approved to fund the prepayments of rural household infrastructure grant amounting to 33 million. What happened here, Chair, is that in the previous financial year, we made payments for the development of sanitation infrastructures, the toilets in rural areas. But during the audit, what was found was that as at 31st March, some of the building material in respect of those areas had not been delivered to the site. And as a result, AG declared the total amount of 33 million as a prepayment, and it could not be charged against the vote. And it was only in the following financial year that these building materials were delivered, hence the 33 million being written against the vote in the following financial year. The second one, Chair, is a variant of 2.1 million from Program 1 administration to Program 2, which is Housing Policy Research and Monitoring. And this was approved to fund the COVID-19 awards, which at that time had been under-budgeted. This slide, Chair, gives a total picture of the annual expenditure per program as of 31st March 2014. You'll notice that the final allocation, which we had dealt with in the previous slides, was 28.2 billion. The total expenditure in the department was 27.7 billion, and there was an unspent amount of 552,468,000. And that meant that in terms of the total allocation, the department had spent 98% of the allocation. Of course, the percentage is shared and differs from program to program administration with a expenditure percentage of 74%, and while housing development finance had a higher percentage of 99%. But overall, the department was sitting at 98%. Looking into why the reasons for underspending, the first one, Chair, was in respect of the SIU allocation. We understand on the SIU allocation, and this was due to the fact that an SIU was not invoicing the department or not providing the department with supporting documentation. In some instances, they would invoice the department, but when the department requests additional information, additional supporting documentation, it would not be provided, and therefore would end up not paying. The department held various meetings, but this could not be resolved. Funds provided for leasing of additional office accommodation had not been fully utilized. This chair was due to the fact that the Department of Public Works had entered into a 7-year lease agreement on behalf of the department for these buildings. However, there was a dispute between DPW and the landlord, and the result was that there was a delay in planned building refurbishment and tenant installations. We therefore could not occupy the building, and on the other hand, because we did not occupy the building, we could not pay rental for the building. The result was an expenditure on the allocation on the department. The other reason for an expenditure was on the NASP program. The NASP program ended up getting a cut by the National Treasury, and this was mainly because there was a delay in the implementation of the program. The other contributing factors applicable throughout the department was underspending on compensation of employees. The COO mentioned this about the level of the higher rate of vacancies in the department. Must admit here that this was one area where we did not do very well in terms of expenditure. But efforts were made, and at the end of financial year, we were sitting at 19%, as opposed to the higher, almost 30% vacancy rate. These chair are transfer payments as at 31st March. This is the 97%, which constitutes the biggest portion of the department's budget allocation. You will notice here that most transfers have been made by the end of the financial year, except a few. The Royal House Infrastructure Development grant was not fully spent. We underspent there. You will notice here that we were sitting at 9% as at the end of the financial year. I must also add here that there were two portions of this grant. There was a direct grant and there was an indirect grant. We underspent on the indirect grant. The direct portion was transferred to municipalities, but even there we did not do very well. We transferred at the end, towards the end of the financial year, because there was an error in the gazetting of the grant, and we had to talk to Treasury to re-gazette the grant, and that process was only finalized towards November, December. As a result, transfers to municipalities took place in the last quarter of the financial year. The other issue on this slide is the transfer payment to the SHRA of 318, which was not made. We, of the 904 million budgeted for the SHRA, 585 was transferred, leaving 318 million not transferred. There were challenges in the structure, resulting in us not transferring the whole amount which was budgeted for the SHRA. And that resulted in under expenditure on the part of the department, because that money was not transferred and it was specifically allocated and appropriated for SHRA. It could not be used for anything else. With regards to the performance of the Human Settlement Development Grant, this slide gives a total picture of how the grant performed. The Human Settlement Development Grant, as we know, is transferred by the National Department to Provincial Human Settlements Department. You will notice here that the total allocation was 16.9 billion. There was a 44.4 million disaster additional allocation in respect of disaster relief, which I mentioned in the earlier slide. And that 44.4 million was transferred to four provinces as shown, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape. Then there was a rollover from the previous financial year, so not a rollover, a reallocation. What happened here is that Limpopo had challenges of spending, and as a result, the DOR provisions were instituted by the department, where 644 million was then moved from Limpopo to other provinces. You will notice here that the benefiting provinces are those State, KZN, Northern Cape, Northwest, and Western Cape. I must also share that most of that that money was specifically shifted and reallocated to address bucket eradication in various provinces, in those provinces in the country. You will notice here that Free State received the biggest amount, because that is where you have the biggest backlog of buckets in the country. That means here that in total, if you look at the total available, total allocation for the grant was 17 billion. And all amount was transferred to the provinces. The provinces received the whole amount, and the provinces spent 60.5 billion, giving you an expenditure rate of 97%. You will notice that they differ from province to province. Most provinces spent 100% of the allocation, and Northwest overspent by 7%, and Limpopo was right at the bottom at 44%. You will notice here that Limpopo was at 44%, despite the fact that we had shifted money from them. And so even with the remaining amount, they could not actually spend 100% of that. The next slide here looks at the actual service delivery. How many units, how many houses were built, what was used with the money. That slide here is divided into three. The first part gives you the annual delivery target by provinces. You will notice that in terms of the sites, service sites, the total target for the country was 54,164. The total target for top structures, in other words, completed units, was 137,437, giving you a total of 191 for the whole country. And when you look at the actual performance by provinces, you will notice that in respect of service sites, provinces produced 48,193, and in respect of completed units, provinces achieved 105,096, giving you a total of 154,000. The variance, as you can see here, in respect of the service sites was 5,971, and in respect of completed units was 51,501. You will also notice here that there are provinces which overperformed, and there are provinces which underperformed. They vary from one province to the other. If you look at Eastern Cape, for an example, they underperformed by 11,291. Free State overperformed by 754. And Gauteng underperformed by 12,213. And KZN overperformed by 3,202. As you go down, you will notice provinces and performance. Differ from one province. I need help. Thank you, Chief. My apologies, Chair. And on this slide, Chair, this is the performance of the USDG, the Urban Settlement Development Grant. This grant, Chair, is transferred to metros by the National Department. The total allocation was 9 billion, and there were rollovers from the previous year amounting to 512 million, giving you a total amount available for spending of 9.5 billion. The National Department transferred the whole allocation of 9 billion. And by the end of March 2014, metros reported expenditure of 4.8 billion. which meant that they had 4.1 billion to spend up to the end of their financial year. You will notice here that you remember here that the financial years of local government are not the same as the provincial and national government. Their year ends in June 2014. So at end of March, they were sitting at around 50%. But what we have done here, we have added this slide just to indicate how they spent up to the end of their financial year. You will notice here that in terms of their spending, end of financial year, they have spent 8.8 billion from the 9.5 billion allocated to them, which meant that there was 740 million unspent. I must also admit here that the column which is tied 100% is not correct. There is an error there. But in terms of spending, they were sitting at 92.3%. When you look at what the SDG was used for by the metros, those figures say give you a total indication of where did the money go in respect of the USDG. You will notice that in terms of their spending, the biggest amount, which is 2 billion, went to sewerage. Then we had 1.8 million, which went to transport. The other bigger amount was 1.9 billion, which went to special development and the built environment. And this gives you an indication of where does the USDG actually go? What does it do in metros? And of course, when you look at individual metros, you find differences in terms of how they spend the money. The next slide gives you more information by metro. This is Buffalo City. I'm not sure, whether I should go into all these slides about the individual metros. But the previous slide gives you a total picture.
I really want to believe that you don't have to go to metro by metro. I believe that the committee members will be able to do that by themselves.
Thank you, Chair. I must just add one little thing, just that on this slide, the last column is showing 100%, and there was an error there, because the adjusted allocation was 790. They spent 789, and that is not 100%. And these slides, which follow these ones, they actually just tell you where, specifically, where did the money, what did the metro do, and each metro, what did it do with the money. This is just for more information. I will skip all these slides and go to the next one, and that is the audit. In terms of the audit outcomes, the department received an unqualified audit opinion, but there were emphasis of matters. The first emphasis of matters here was with regards to underspending by the department. As already mentioned, underspending on the NASP program. You will notice here that I indicated that Treasury cut us by 20% on that program. I must also add here that in order to address this, the department this year has established a panel of service providers to assist the department to address the upgrading of informal settlements throughout the country. The NAS is a program which is intended to address all informal settlements throughout the country. The next issue, Chair, on under expenditure was under expenditure by the department on the RIG program. As indicated in the previous slide, we underspent on RIG. And the AG emphasized that and put it as an emphasis of matter. Other emphasis of matter relate, the third emphasis of matter relate to the predetermined objectives in the department on those programs, program 2, program 3, and program 4. What happened here is that there were material changes which were made to indicators and targets and reported on the annual performance report without these having been approved by the minister. during the year there were amendments on the APP and the structure of the department. But someone unfortunately forgot to submit that to the minister. And so when AG was auditing the APP and the structure plan, which was the latest, was an amended document which had not been approved by the minister. Then the next one was consistency under performance information, consistency on indicators and targets. What they found here was that the reported indicators and targets were not consistent with those approved in the annual performance plan. When they looked in the annual report and compared on the APPs, there were differences. There was an error in the drafting here. Then there was also an issue on measurability of indicators and targets. The departmental targets were not specific, and that's what the AG found. And as a result, they felt that it was difficult for them to measure our performance on those particular indicators. There was also an issue around reliability of reported performance information. Significant important targets were not reliable according to them when compared to the source information as evidence provided. What we failed here to do was provide AG with adequate evidence. Work was done, but when they wanted evidence, we failed to provide them with the necessary adequate evidence. And the other issue was non-compliance of laws and regulations. Effective, efficient, and transparent systems of risk management and internal control with respect to performance information and management was not maintained as required by PFMA. And the last issue, Chair, was with regards to the on performance information, was regards to the adjustments which were made during the audit. They found errors, particularly with accruals. Our accruals were understated, and as a result, they had to be adjusted during the audit. The department could not provide the AG with human resource with the human resource plan as required by the public service regulations. And another issue which has already been mentioned here was the funded vacant post. The AG was of the view that our vacancy rate was too high. Another issue here was with regards to the assets. These assets mainly are basically referring to the structures built using the RIC funding. These are toilets which were built during the year. What AG indicated here was that they were not very convinced with the systems we were using to register and maintain an asset register. Our asset register was not up to date as at the end of financial year when they were auditing. And that is the issue they raised. What we have done here to address all these things was to develop an action plan so that we can use it as a tool to address all the findings raised by the AG. The action plan has been populated with all the findings, and it has been circulated to responsible DDGs and chief directors for their planned actions. I must also indicate, Chair, that this action plan is was submitted to AG for their comment, and it was also submitted to internal audit for their verification. And what internal audit does on a monthly basis is that they table a report to executive management to indicate progress in implementing this action plan. And that is the monitoring this slide is referring to. And I must also indicate here that during the year, the AEG provides a feedback on a quarterly basis. They look at our progress, and they do some tests. And on a quarterly basis, they produce a dashboard report, and which the DG is always expected to sign off. And these are the efforts, Chair, we go through to address all the findings. And thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that concludes our very brief presentation, and we try to reflect on a number of areas. I'm sure that the comprehensive annual report will also venture into some areas that we may have not touched on our presentation, but we're trying to be as effective summary as possible circumstances. And we thank you for listening to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Izzy and the team. That's the report from the department. Clarity? Question? So, you don't want to be the first one, you won't be anyone. You won't be anyone, you better be the first one, because otherwise I'm just going to simply close the debate. No, but you are not sharing, I'm sharing. Until the DA wins the election, then you become the chairperson of the portfolio committee. See, that's the problem. Yeah. Can I have hands so that I can note them, please? Honorable Ntobongwana, Honorable Baker, Honorable Shelembe, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Horai, Honorable Kapa, Honorable Nemezi, and Honorable... What's your name? Ngarak Babashi. Oh, and Honorable Kaka. Let's start. Honorable Ntobongwana.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. I'm still going back to that question I asked earlier. How many employees are suspended and it was caused? Thank you.
How many staff that you have that is suspended and at what cost are they costing the department? We'll explain why that question is coming up. Honorable Baker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is with regards to the sanitation register. The maintenance of this register has been done. That's a cause for concern because considering the backlog, I mean, 2013, 2013, the backlog for provision of basic sanitation was sitting at 1.4 million. And without a proper register, how do you know properly where we need to go and how we're going to get there? It's a bit confusing.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, when you win, I'll be the chairperson. Thank you to the department for the presentation. DG and the team, there are two aspects, and maybe you can assist me. I know the acting CFO mentioned that there was money directed to budget eradication. That's why maybe the targets are not met. But when I look at the, in terms of the deliverable, whether it's the price or the top structure, we have achieved, according to the report, 75% of the target. But we have spent 87% of the HSDG. Which begs the question, was it a matter of not budgeting correctly? Because if you spend 96% of the money, then the target that you are supposed to achieve, they will try to be in the same line. But the variance there, in terms of the money spent and the target achieved, it's at around 21%, that's the gap. So you have spent 96% of the money, but we have only achieved 75% of the target. Something just doesn't add up. My math doesn't add up. Which means even if we spend 100% of the money, we're not going to achieve 100% of the target. Because I don't believe that the 4% or the 2% that is left, that is unspent, can cover the 25% of the target that we did not achieve. So can I get a clarity on that? Secondly, and the issue of the rig is coming. When the other people were here, they were saying that this has been coming for the last three years, that at the end of the financial year, we have spent the entire budget, and then there was there are rollovers. And it seems like there's a backlog of spending, if there's such a term, when by the time that we have to give money to the municipalities, but that they are still waiting to spend the money that they didn't spend the financial year. So maybe try to understand what mechanism, because when I see at the action page there, this week, and if I look at, I mean, one of the first methods of services from the Auditor General for this financial year and the previous one, it's around the spending on REIT and how much and the time that money is transferred to the municipalities available to them to spend. And one thing that was used was that because some of these municipalities are so small, when you give them money so late, we actually shock them. They say they don't have shock absorbers, financial shock absorbers in the rural municipalities, because that's where the rural reach is going. So what mechanisms? Because when I see that, I don't see you touching on that risk aspect, and this is something that has been in the auditor's report for the last 2-3 years. So maybe you can answer on that. And then the one that came was the issue of financial disclosure. We're told by the PSC that in 2010-2011. The department was complying, was at 100%. But then 2012-2018, it dropped to zero. And then 2013-2014, it remained at zero in terms of financial disclosures of senior managers in the department, which means you are not meeting, you are not complying. That's the PSC. They say there's an edge there when senior managers have to disclose financial interests. As part of the Public Service Act, that's the information that they told us, and this is like it was read for two years. I mean, maybe you can get an understanding from your side whether all the senior managers, the SMS, they call it the SMS, the senior manager service, so those people who are earning, I presume, significantly higher than MPs, they've been declared or they've been disclosed. The finances according to this. The other one on this.
Hoping for an increase.
I wish. And then, yeah, this one, and it comes back to the ring, sorry, and you mentioned it as well. It's the Auditor General mentioned something about prepaid, or you use prepaid, wherein money seems to have gone, but services haven't been received. I know they did say that the services for REIT, or this was what the AG said, the services for REIT were not received, but money was paid or committed or something to that effect. Very difficult to clarify. I think that the acting CFO used the term prepaid, and then the AG used the term, what did you say? The money was paid without before services could be delivered. That's the term that the AG said. So you use the acting CFO used the term prepaid when you were speaking around the REIT aspect. And I noted it as a prepaid. It's difficult to clarify what you meant by that and what is being done to ensure that services are delivered and money is paid and not people trying to spend money. And then what's on that? This fiscal dumping, I think it appears on one of the reports that I read around the REIT. It's less money, but because of what it's supposed to be doing, it's impacting the life of the rural household. Thanks, Chair, for now.
Thanks for now, Aratokana. Honorable Chairman, do you have your hand up?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Just checking with you. Normally, when people are doing the work, they always rush, I mean, to push invoice to get paid. But in the case of the SIU, they say it's because of the delay and forwarding invoice that to you. You know, to me, I don't know what's happening. Maybe you can elaborate more. Would you be the one thing I've seen a phone cocktail corner? And then two, another one would turn out with Zaganga, which is my ELS young Gaga. Go Maspal, which can work a lot of tip. Municipalities are the developing agents for the department nationally. But looking at the case, it's like now, would Imal is being sent late to them, which is in the daily China, who the target here, the minister, yes, is. Then, just want to know how often do you meet with the Office of the Auditor General? Because the abuse of the Lama issues, I think there may be an improvement. If you look at from the Office of the Auditor General. But so how often do you meet? Because Mobuala is like, the issue with human resource land, the effort management with the major. How often do you meet and why? Then you are trying to address the issue of filling these critical activities. As you said, the market seems to be too difficult to get people to qualify for the job. But how often do you meet with the Office of the Auditor General?
Thank you, Honorable Senator. Honorable Fora?
Sir, thank you very much. And let me start by thanking the department for the presentation. Chair, my question starts from page 1. Where the parents talk about their branches. I see that they have branch 1 and 6. And the 5 and 6 seems to be one branch, Office of the Chief Financial Officer. Office of the Chief Financial Officer. Just a clarity and explanation. To me, I think the department is 5 branches, not 6. I'm not sure whether I'll be correct. 2, page 5, for communication and outreach. Very important, and we appreciate the department with the communication that they make to all the sectors of our communities. But my recommendation will be the department can, as members of parliament and members of the particular portfolio committee, I think it is appreciable if the department also look at our constituency office for the information. Sometimes it's difficult to have the meeting with all the communities, but people normally go to our constituency office, they can get the particular information about what is really necessary in the Department of Settlement. So I made that as a recommendation, if possible, that our office must be also considered on this matter. The other one is one of the deadlines, the page 13 and 14, where it says, for this matter, we are looking for attention. The department that they're saying that they take attention for that. Maybe they prioritize the challenges. But I'm sure that the department must actually have the deadline. Because maybe in another year we'll come and say, just deal it in attention and nothing happens. If the department can really look at the issue. Lastly, there's a slide that talks about the vacancy and the post that is being advertised. At the end of the day, people are not qualifying and the last. I really wanted to check when you advertise. Did you really advertise for certain specifications and people are not attending to what you have requested? Because I see that there are people that are going to be re-advertised. And I'm sure that causes the problem of the vacancy rate. Last issue, one from the normally the president in Shona used to to tell the country that the issue of the payment of the service providers to all the departments must actually take 30 days. Can I check on that matter? Are you compliant to what the president used to say or used to put in his state of nation address that people are not suffering, people are taking long before they can get the payment of what they feed your department? Yeah, bom.
Bom, bem, na, bom. Para tu, pai.
Can you say, first, I haven't heard anything talking about the lack of capacity. And this airs on what I think that I'm convinced that it's not a problem in the department. Therefore, that takes me to the next issue now, where you say there is a process of meeting the AG with quarterly reports, which tells me that that kind of monitoring would assist to monitor all the processes, including from the previous reports from the AG to correct the previous mistakes. And then when it further takes me now to this issue that who actually made these changes which were done without being approved? And then was there any corrective measure to change that situation so that such things are not done by competent people in the department? Thank you.
We also appreciate the detailed input from the department. However, we want to assist by indicating areas that we would appreciate if the department can clarify us to ensure that these things are not repeating themselves going forward. Maybe starting with the other areas that have been mentioned by colleagues, the question of delayed invoices. My question is, if the invoices were not coming, what did the department do? We expect the department to do something, because this will affect you later, so you can't rejoice. So we expect you to do something. The other issue we want clarity on, or maybe we must be clear with the department that understanding in a society like South Africa remains a crime. You depriving many, many people who are looking upon this government, they voted. So now, failure to expect, no matter what excuses, should be avoided. We think you are good in planning, but what we are seeing here, including your listing of two buildings in 240 and 260, just in Mohammed Street, you must tell us about your planning processes, because I think whatever you do should be informed by your proper planning. So you don't do things that you get to build it, but you don't go to them, which means you never needed them. So you are just spending money for what reason? So while people are looking for these services that we are now depriving them on, so we need an explanation. And also, along what the member Clapper said, also consequences. Are there consequences when learned people who said during the interviews they will do whatever, they've got qualification, they've got skills, they've got ability. Now when they show that they don't, is there a consequence? We want to know, are there actions that were taken so that those things are not repeated? On page 40 to 42 of your presentation, you dealing with matters of emphasis from the AG. My question is, are these, because you have also given us your plans, how you hope to correct them, but my question is, are these matters of emphasis coming for the first time? Is it not correct that in the last 2 years, some of these were coming again and again? So what happened? Why didn't you fix them? So then how do we track that this time you hit, if you didn't fix in the last 2 years? So we want to know what happened, if indeed some of these were there in the last 2 years, because we really would want you to move out of this situation. We want this department to be a simpler department in the Republic. I think the issue of predetermined objectives, because you must plan, agree, check everything. Once you agree, then you must ensure that your core functions are a priority, so that you don't end up spending more on other issues than on the core functions. So deviations and all those are really questions that worry us. So when you fail to honor your own plans, I think we would want to understand, are there consequences, actions, because that's important, but in future it doesn't happen.
You harassed me. What did you want to do? Just one word. I saw you.
DG Limpopo. Chair. Limpopo. Money was taken. It was half. Let's say three quarters. A third of the money was taken. Still, there remains challenges. I know for 2 years, the excuse was that, no, we are under national government, it's what, supply chain and so forth. But when I look at the reasons, it's not right, man. When are you going to Polokwane to have a conversation with the with the people of Liverpool?
Thank you, Honorable Kana, you've made your point. I still have two, and, oh, Honorable Nanga Kabash.
Thank you, Mr. All of us same thing. On rural household that rig infrastructure grant, I just want to say that you see this grant, it's intended to reduce income inequalities and poverty in rural areas. So if for 3 financial years we are underspending, it means we won't realize our goals, the NGP, on the outcome page. That's the first point. The second point is that the planning for rural development, this type of rural development, whether it's an infrastructure or it's a delivery of houses, is lesser than the urban areas. In fact, we are supposed to be doing even more better in rural areas because the planning is lesser. Planning requirements are lesser, even if they are infrastructural ones, are lesser than the urban areas. So to me, the provincial, the rural provinces, should be the ones that are leading in terms of the delivery, in both whether it's sanitation or the housing delivery. Is it a problem of the capacity of those municipalities? If it's a problem of the capacity within those municipalities, we have local government, we have COP to assist them. It's not just a burden of. But also, Chairperson, that drives me to say, if this has been happening, the Fiscal Commission, the Financial and Fiscal Commission, we're citing certain examples, some of the reasons why the department has been failing to decide that money is transferred to
towards the end of the financial year, he might official previously, the current one, they said have improved. Is that these monies were firstly on water department and then I don't know whether it's rural development or local government and then human settlement and then now it's going to. Maybe it's time, Shepherdson, that we take a decision that really this is the home for this sanitation program. Is this human settlement a home, really home for the sanitation or really? It's not. So if, I know what we are still having it because of the funds that are allocated to us. Maybe it's high time, Chairperson, that we deliberate and start to look at that these funds must be really totally transferred to its home, which is water and sanitation. The other one, Chair, is that the USDG that you have. You have, up to now, you have three metros. Nelson Mandela was sitting at on the 31st of March, sitting at 47%. Johannesburg, 41%. City of Cape Town, 41%. And the question is, if in March we're left with only 3 months towards their end of financial year, and I think the CFO, am I referring to the correctly? Yes. He was giving us a table that indicates how are they going to perform towards their or the perform at the end of their financial year, which is end of June. But I can't remember which page. But I think there were some metros that did not spend fully on that. And others are doing fairly well. Maybe we need to go back to the drawing board. Because if a metro is not using a USDG grant, but the other thing is that if the USDG grant is used for transport, is this really meant for transport? For transport development? For sewer line, and everything that comes with it for its planning and everything, that's fine. But for roads, access roads or transport, really, really is not in within our function. Within and I think that we must go back to the drawing board with that DSC. But also this USDG is also to improve the quality of life. Because in an urban area, there are really houses that were built long time ago that doesn't have a running sewer. And the USDG grant is there to address that, and it is not spent by the metro. Then it means really they don't have the capacity for us to accreditate them at a level 3. How are we going to give them accreditation at level 3? If they are unable to spend this, because this is there really, this is in an urban area. But I also share aware that there are challenges in terms of the way the money is being allocated, and I think that in the between national treasury, human settlement, and local government needs to be speedily resolved in relation to USDG grants. In terms of the targets by provinces of plan targets and deliveries. One of the reports indicates that out of 9 provinces, there's only one province that is really seem to be aligning, and that was the Auditor General, aligning targets, it's not no FSC, aligning the targets and the delivery output. So and it was said it's KZN. But if we don't do that, if we don't up to this stage get it right, the planning and the targets by other 8 provinces, it means our 30-year plan of the NGP is not going to realize because we are not planning properly. And we can't keep on pumping money for the sake of doing it. We have to be aligned, everything must be aligned as the outcome page of the NGP. Chairperson, in that area of the size and the units that are built, but I want to have put it with a certain report that deals with this, which is very critical for us to provide a gap market housing. And the target was huge, was 3,080 target, and we only achieved 207. And at some stage, this entity was able to come before us, Chair, and explained that they are only operating, if I'm not mistaken, in housing only at this stage. Yeah, okay, we will come back to that. But what my point is, they are supposed to, in this one is supposed to assist us in addressing our imbalances in terms of how our people are in the gap market, but also bringing in the radical economic shift. If we are not realizing all these things, all these targets we are spending for ourselves and spend money upon them, we are not spending in the manner that it is, we are not really contributing in the radical economic shift that we set ourselves for. The expenditure for...
I hope you have your last point.
I'm rounding up the chair. There's a report about the assets on toilet, assets register on toilet bills. You see, I mean, that's where again, I probably say would be. I'm not convinced that the job creation contribution, the human settlement, is reported for us. Because if we don't have a asset register, proper asset register of the toilet that we built, I can't remember which province, then the province cannot tell us, or the municipality, or the district cannot tell us that this is really the actual job that was created if there's no asset register, if there's no But I want the chair lastly to end by to say maybe we need a plan that it might not be an administrator, but some kind of intervention by National Human Settlement to work with the province of Limpopo in terms of the delivery of houses. We can't just leave it to the we take money, and I think it's a serious problem. We need to have a program that you talk to their delivery, working together, assisting them, working together with them in terms of the delivery of homes in the corporation.
Thanks, Chair. It's always nice to speak last because I'm covered in most of my questions and I'm not going to repeat them. But I have two questions that I have in mind I want to ask the department. For instance, under page 13, efficient utilization of land for human settlement development. I think this subject has been coming for quite some time now, and I think as a portfolio, we would like to know what is the progress so far. I know at the bottom there is a general statement, I mean one would say general statement, where it says ADA commenced discussions with relevant provinces and municipalities to assist with packaging of released land for development. But I think as a portfolio, perhaps we need that land audit, where is this piece of land and what is it meant for, and like the plan around those pieces of land. And then the second one is around the HR issues. The PSC was here this morning, and one of the issues they have raised in terms of the underperformance of the department with regards to vacancy, filling of vacancies. They mentioned something that I think it kind of, you know, shocked me to see that the department don't have the human resource plan in place. And perhaps there is, but apparently according to the PSC, there is no plan. And my question is, I mean, how do you run the department if there is no HR plan in place? And it also goes to the other sector to say that, I mean, 2% to put people with disability, 2% is almost nothing. And the department seems not to be performing for many years, I think 0.1%. And I'm asking myself, there's so many companies that, I mean, or agencies that work with people with disability. And I'm asking, what is the problem of this department for not filling that particular area, so that we can safely say that human settlement, like Ubaba earlier on said, that we have to be the best department in the country. But I mean, when it comes to people with disability, we have to ensure that we are inclusive department. We play that diversity in the department. Thank you very much.
very much, honorable members. Before I hand over to the department of health to respond, maybe one needs to probably just further the issue of the HR issues as raised by the previous chapter 9 voters. For instance, if I listen to the department presenting, they're saying the vacancy rate is at 14%. And I think from what we heard earlier on with the PSE, they said the vacancy rate of women's settlement is at 22%. So probably we need that clarity. They said it's at 22%, and they did indicate that it has improved from the previous year, but it is still very high compared to the fact that we know that we at least it should be 10% and below. So maybe we just need to understand 14% versus 22%, that's a big gap. Which one is correct? But, you know, one of the things that I'm interested to hear as well is the fact that one of the things that they said was in terms of corruption watch, there's about 60 cases that were reported, but according to the department, none of them has been resolved. Is it because of the reporting pattern that probably they pick the fact that nothing has been reported in resolving any of those cases, or is it really because none has been resolved? Remember, these are the cases that would involve your staff that has been involved in some corruption activities or something related. And according to them, none of those things have been resolved. So we would like to have access. Because for me, one of the glaring issues is around HR in the department. If you can deal with the HR issues, I think many of the other things can really be closed up. One of the glaring issues is this issue of HR. For instance, we can't just assume that this is a minor issue. The fact that some board somewhere forgot to submit to the minister changes to on objectives and indicators. And that forgetfulness results in an audit outcome that has got findings. And we're not hearing what then have we done about this. I think that question has been asked. For me, it's a very serious anomaly. How does someone does changes on indicator and forget to submit this? Because it doesn't matter that we're not going to get the details, but it says a lot about then the performance of the department due to an individual, which we don't hear what has been done to this individual. So for me, HR issues, my big legs, and it talks to the fact that you are saying there is no HR plan. Is there an HR plan? So maybe as the department responds to the questions, then we need to tighten up the proposal as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, for your very robust line of clarity seeking and questioning on the presentation that you've just done as a department on the year under review. I would love to respond, Honorable Chair, to some of the areas, and some of the areas relate directly to my questions, and I would like them to deal with some of those issues. But I will take some of the issues myself because of their policy nature. Let me start with rape because it's the most topical subject matter by the committee members, and it's been like that for the last 2 years as well. So it's not something that we have not been aware of. Let me start by saying that firstly, we never had the capacity to run this program. And I know that I could not see that coming quite sharply in the presentation, but when this program was transferred in 2009, we knew that the department did not have capacity to run this program because of its nature. It's an engineering nature of work to be done. So we outsourced that function to two service providers who were doing it on our behalf. And our responsibility as a department was to monitor the progress being made by the two entities, which was IDT and Vula Trust, having been appointed through a proper procurement process. But we have had a number of challenges on the implementation of this program at that time. I don't want to get into the detail. We have reported, if you check the records of the portfolio committee, you'll also see how we've been reporting and the challenges we had when it was implemented. It was for the first time that the department was running with this program. But again, the terms of reference of this program kept on changing in terms of the model. As you would have seen that in the last financial year under review, we were just tasked to allocate the money to municipalities. And one question that has been coming out quite sharply is the delay in terms of transferring money. Now, one of the most painful tasks of a transferring officer is when you must transfer money willingly without satisfying yourself that for what the money is intended for, indeed, should be done. And you can only do that by getting a very simple business plan that tells you how the money to be transferred will be used. And that's one of the conditions and requirements by National Treasury. And some of the delays in particular related to that effect, because I kept on saying, I can transfer money anytime to any municipality, but without a business plan that convinces how the money will be used, we'll transfer the money and the money will be used for something else. And the question will be asked, National Transferring Officer, how did you the first place transfer money without first satisfying yourself that the business plans at your disposal are satisfactory enough to do that? That one major reason, Honorable Chair, the delay to transfer money has happened. Besides the fact that, again, the model for this project changed in that particular year, as was advised by Treasury. What's going to happen with RIC, and I think a number of honorable members have raised the issue, as a department with the introduction of water upgrade and sanitation, we have dealt with Treasury and we have submitted a formal request to transfer all sanitation-related programs to Water Affairs and Sanitation Department. And we hope that when the midterm budget comes, some of the aspects of this matter will be dealt with. But as a department, we have taken that initiative with the own underlying objective that has been outlined by some of the honorable members. And we hope that will improve on the management of this particular program, and all the challenges that have been highlighted will be dealt with. And that also includes the responsibility for bucket eradication, which is money that has already been referenced within the grant of HSDG for the implementation of the program. Those programs put together, we have requested a formal transfer to be done to Water Affairs and Sanitation. As a department, we are even prepared to reinforce all the money that has already been gazetted and make sure that all of it is effectively transferred to the relevant department, and then we monitor the spending because the money is still gazetted under us. And later on, 2 years later, there will be some mechanism to make sure that it has not affected the formula of National Treasury disbursing funds for HSDG account purposes to the department. So that's one approach that we have adopted. That's what we have done already. We have made all the submissions. We are waiting for the Minister of Finance to make a response to that. On the issue of financial disclosures, Chair, I've always recommended that at times we are able to cross-check information, and it doesn't seem coming. It's becoming a problem for some of us, because if there's a zero financial disclosure, for 2 consecutive years, it's a serious indictment on our accountability and responsibility. And zero means no one has submitted. That includes me, which I know I've done. Now, so I'm not sure whether it's an aggregate zero, which means out of 78 senior executives, only 5 submitted, and then it represents 0%. That could be one equation that one cannot ignore. But we've been very confident on this with the SMS members, and I have sent some of those leaders myself, coming from senior managers. I'll just request the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members to cross-check that part with the PSC, because the information comes to us, it goes to the Minister, from the Minister, of all SMS members, it goes to them. I would like to cross-check what could have happened, but I know that some of us have declared as it is a requirement of the law to do so. It's not something that you do out of love of it. It's a prescript that all SMS must comply with. Failure to do so, as members are saying, there must be consequences. So I would like to be given an opportunity to check that part and come back to the members. It is indeed true again, sir, that some of the reasons us for not spending the money, and I fully take responsibility, as members have indicated, that this is a serious matter. If you don't spend, which means somewhere, somehow, your plans are not up to speed, or you don't know what you're doing, or you're delaying delivery on various aspects of our work. This is where, Chair, again, you don't want an accounting officer to simply transfer or simply pay. Because if you don't put your eyes on what you pay for, and you pay without evidence of work done, you are also risking your responsibility and your accountability as a transferring officer, as an accounting officer. And I must state here that with the issue of SIU, part of it was that we have received invoices at a later stage, and we could not effect some of their payments because we needed evidence of the work done. We should then say there's a value for money for the contractual arrangement that we have with them, and that delayed the payment. And a number of meetings were arranged. A number of meetings could not take place, were cancelled, and I offered to present myself to those meetings with the executives of the SIU and express my frustration as an accounting officer that you don't simply pay invoices above 5 million at least without properly checking if the work has been done. So you also miss the amount of money that you have to pay for, and if you are not satisfied with evidence of where that has been done, then you become circumspect about to make those payments. That has been a challenge, Chair. And I think as well, with all due respect, there have been quite a number of institutional changes that have been happening in the SIU in terms of the executives in charge of the work that we do with them. I'm sure that has also affected the flow of work and correspondence amongst ourselves. But the matter is receiving our attention. My office has confirmed that there is a meeting being arranged with SIU to deal with this matter and the work that they do. In fact, the work they do for us has declined in the last 2 years, and some of the investigations we're doing them internally as a department to make sure that we deal with the backlog moving forward. So that's the challenge again, is to be circumspect as accounting officer, not to simply see an invoice and without proper evidence on the invoice attached, you simply make the payments. Then you compromise on accounting responsibility, and later on it can also come back to bite you. How often do we meet with the Office of the AG? I'm sure the acting CFO will talk to that. But we also have an established structure within the department which should communicate with the Office of the AG on day-to-day basis, especially with regard to various findings. We have a standing committee meeting, which is the audit committee meeting of which they also sit. I also, as the accounting officer, have standing meetings, which normally happens on monthly basis, with Office of the AG directly myself, where they brief me of the progress that we are making regarding various audit findings. On monthly basis, those meetings, they happen, they are recorded, there are minutes to those meetings where which they sit, and it's true that some of the matters that have been raised have been recurring, and it has not been easy to deal with them. In particular, the issue again of making sure that the assets that get delivered from the RIC project were properly registered. In fact, this was one of the more challenging areas. Again, it's because you have too many players. You give money to the municipalities, and the terms they must put those projects, they must have those assets registered. But AG was saying at the end of the day, this department must have those registers as well. So we must do whatever it takes to know where those assets, where they are. At some point, I was forced to send my team to physically check the existence of those structures in the areas where monies have been transferred to satisfy themselves and record. It's quite a mammon task, but because it was eventually an instruction. In fact, if you have not done so, they would have received a disclaimer in this year under review. So we needed to check out that and demand information from service providers, demand information from municipalities, and make the submission to AG, which was to some degree satisfactory. Hence, we did not get a disclaimer, but it was getting closer to that because of the manner in which we were trying to manage this particular challenge. One is hoping, therefore, that when it happens that the process is transferred, there will be better management of all the sanitation programs, particularly in rural areas, has been indicated. And I will request the acting CFO to deal with the issue of payment of service providers, because this is another area that we get measured on quarterly basis and monthly basis by Foresight and the Office of the President. There is lack of capacity Honorable Kapari, is the level of vacancies, Chair, which again would like to do our research. As of this morning, we have done our last assessment and we came into 40%. It's an assessment that we have done from our own system, and I'm not sure whether they're still using an outdated information, but Chair, I can put my head on the block from our own assessment department that we're sitting at 40%. So we're 4%, even though we have improved, but 4% above the threshold, which is something that we are dealing with, and I have put consequences again, because that's the most important thing. When you realize the challenge, what have you done? So correspondence is available where consequences have now been put in place to deal with this matter, but the minister has also further taken some measures to deal particularly with an era of senior managers where there are vacancies, and she has made quite a number of proposals that she has requested me to implement as a matter of high priority. So we take responsibility for that. I don't want to justify the lack of capacity in various areas to deal with the matter, including the competence required to manage certain processes. We're taking responsibility for that and we're putting measures to implement that. Some of those measures, of course, unfortunately, are of disciplinary nature to deal with the challenge that we're having. We know the challenge of unemployment in our country, so there is no department that can justify the failure to do so with the funds available in particular. So, but again, we verify the numbers, Chair, with the presenter of Mshuto's Public Service Commission and see if the information that we have at our disposal can correlate with what they've presented. On issues of the strat plans and targets that have been changed, Chair, I think the aid was using two reports, and again, we take responsibility for this as executive management. Because when you realize, once you have a privilege to review your plans, they go stand cast in stone. But as you do that, you need to make sure that all processes are completed. And I think in this particular instance, the process could not reach its end. And again, amongst all the audit findings, Chair, that we have received, including this one, we are putting measures to deal with that. And that will also call for consequences as well where we have failed to do so. Though we are allowed to do so, but the last signature should be the executive authority to approve those changes, because your plans, as you go along, the time they change. So it's a very dynamic environment. You can't stick to them as they are all the time. But as you make changes to improve elsewhere or to make sure that your targets remain relevant, you are expected to do so. And again, in each and every finding that has been found, we are putting measures in way. Consequences of whatever nature are expected, we are putting those in place. That forms part of our action plan as we move along. In fact, that's how AG is going to be measuring us against their own findings and what measures are we putting in place, what consequences have been taken, where necessary to deal with those issues that have been raised here. So as we report to the portfolio committee on the audit findings, we'll be clearly reflecting on each and every finding, how have we gone about dealing with those measures, especially on matters where they are recurring, because in some instances we have matters of emphasis that have been recurring for about 3 years or so, and measures have not been effectively put in place to do that. So we will be reflecting on the findings and also share with the action plan, which we are sharing with them. As a matter of fact, the action plan that talks to the audit findings and matters of emphasis have been submitted to the Office of the AG. They've sent it to the AP with it now. It's about implementing those plans that we have put in place in dealing with the audit findings. And Chair, our view as a department and our attitude is not to be satisfied with unqualified report, but rather to move towards a cleaner audit process. That's what we are trying to target. But in the last financial year, there's been an element of negligence. I'm not sure that it's because of too many changes that have occurred to the department at an executive level as well, with the CFO resigning and many other changes that could have affected the flow of business of the department. It could have also contributed, but we have retrogressed as compared to how we've performed in the other year, though we have not received a disclaimer, and we have taken cognizance of that. And the action plan will be specific about how to go about dealing with those methods of emphasis as reflected by the Office of the Auditor General. Chair, we are working very hard to assist the Limpopo, and I think the the leadership will also assist on this one. We've been having meetings with the officials and the leadership there to try and come with measures to deal with the situation. It's not going to be an automatic, seamless process, because once you've had a challenge in a particular year, it takes time before you go back to groove, for lack of a better word to use. You got to start calling, and your pipeline becomes affected. The construction sector, its success is dependent on the pipeline. And again, in the same way, I'm also answering question of targets versus delivery in terms of finance. Because in one particular year, you don't spend your money on targets because of your pipeline planning, but you spend your money on non-performance areas like buying of land, purchasing of land, and doing feasibilities for the particular project. And you can't count those as delivered targets. So, because it requires pipeline planning. So you need to know in the first year, second year, third year, what are you going to be doing? And if your plan can't talk to that, you'll be very thumb-sucking when you put your plan and deliver the target. So at times you find there's a misalignment between what the money should buy in a particular year or what the money should deliver in terms of the targets. The two, they don't always go hand in glove. So like if you want to build 3,000 units in the next financial year in a particular policy instrument, and we have not done your feasibility study by now, which means come the first of the next financial year, we have no contractors on the car because you still have to go through all other processes, including procurement, service providers, and so forth. And you do find that challenge when it comes to planning, project management planning at times. And then you find that the budget is very thumbsuck in some instances. And when it's time to deliver off the targets that you want to measure against, you find that the money has bought other elements, but which are very relevant in terms of your projects. And our approach now, as you would know, it's not about putting housing projects anywhere, Honorable Chair. We want to see what USDG is buying in a particular area. We want to see what NIC is buying, and we want to know what the main settlement is buying, and we want to see that integration. So we don't have a housing project without basic services being provided, which is against the spirit of the elevated mandate. Where there's human settlements project, there must all the basic services that we have outlined in terms of water provision, in terms of electricity, in terms of roads, in terms of schools, in terms of clinics. It's much more prevalent than just putting a housing project anyway, which in the past was not really a very thorny issue, but now it is. So when you give us a project, tell us how the pipeline of all other basic provinces, and that calls upon other stakeholders to be on board. And the case in point, Omkabashi, is the Konubia project. Because in the Konubia project, what you see there from a BNG perspective, you see all stakeholders playing a role to make sure that the product is delivered in the context of human settlements. There must be a school, so the Department of Education must tell us, at one point are we going to have schools, and what type of schools, primary, secondary, health department, clinic, industrial development, private sector who are buying land from there. At what point are we going to create jobs when these people are here because you want to protect the assets that you're delivering? So it's much more comprehensive. And the pipeline planning at times, it takes time before you can deliver on it. So hence you find that you can't always have a situation where your financial performance and your target performance is in the same line if the planning was not done properly on the ground. It's not an excuse, but that is why we established our PMU, Brand International, are tightening our monitoring and evaluation of all business loans that we have signed to make sure we don't lose sight of that. But as I'm sitting here, we've been just done the analysis. It's time for that analysis, meeting review. And it's clear that some projects are not performing, and we may have to say to the minister, you may have to invoke your DORA provisions to make sure that the money is not lost in the sector back to fiscals when other provinces, their pipeline plans are performing better. So we're at that level to monitor effectively what is happening on the plans that we have signed. And we find that some elements are not properly budgeted for, and therefore projects cannot be delivered, or houses are going to be delivered, but there will be no water services or electricity ready to do that. ESCOM maybe has not put their plan in line with that project, and consumption levels will be affected. So that plan is very comprehensive, but it requires effective integration of all stakeholders. It's a challenge we are battling with, but we are getting there quite slowly, but effectively so. I think I've covered some of the issues that have been raised here from my perspective, but I'll ask colleagues to pick up where I may have not touched on regarding your clarity-seeking questions and inputs. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Maybe there will be those presented probably the same will run in touch on. But we must be more mindful of the fact that the same representation that is coming, that we still have to do.
Okay.
So as you respond, remember, we are still here for another presentation.
Thank you, Chair. We have 96% was sent, and but in terms of service delivery achievements, we achieved 75%. And that question was raised. As I mentioned, this is a very difficult one. It has been raised time and again. One of the challenges is that we report uncompleted units, and we report on finalized service sites. And our reporting stops there. It does not go further. And this has actually been raised last week by MECs that were coming hard on them. But our reporting, as far as they are concerned, is incomplete. Because if, for an example, a province has got 9 projects running, and all those units are at just above the windows in terms of building the houses. Those units are incomplete. But money has gone there. A lot of money has been invested on everything, right from the beginning, planning, as well as foundations, windows, and everything. But we don't report those units. We only report on completed units. And that is one of the challenges we have, which creates this seeming disjuncture of less percentages in terms of units delivered and high percentages in terms of spending. We are looking into that, Chair, to see whether we cannot find a way for us to report also on the extent of work in progress, so that we can also give more information in terms of where has money gone to. With regard to late transfers of RIG, what happened here, Chair, is that gazetting was, there was an error in gazetting. We must indicate, Chair. RIG was gazetted in Dora to be transferred to municipalities. But it emerged at the time of transfer is that these municipalities are not water service authorities. And the law does not require you to transfer money to a municipality which is not a water service authority to be used for sanitation projects. The result was that we had to follow a process of regazetting and gazette to correct municipalities which are water service authorities. You will understand that there are local, there are district municipalities and all the way through. And therefore we had to recover the allocation. And that process ended around November, December, January. And that is on the last quarter that we were then able to transfer to water service authorities and not to other municipalities. We admit, Jay, that was a late transfer. And it was due to, but with other municipalities, I must indicate, maybe Mr. Chauki can help me here. Because they knew that the allocation is assured, some municipalities went ahead and spent and delivered the services, because the funding was gazetted but incorrectly gazetted, and when the money was transferred by the end of in the last quarter, and in some municipalities it was not going there to start the work because work had already been commenced. The issue of prepayment, UTS charge, we paid for building material to build toilets in the rural areas. But when AG did an audit, they did a very intensive audit. And what they found is that some of these building materials had not been delivered by the end of the financial year. The service providers were delivering in tranches, not everything at one go. And what they found was that some were delivered after the 31st of March. So if it was delivered in April, as far as age is concerned, it's after the year end. And that was the reason why they then sat down and actually calculated all those ones they could verify that they were delivered after the 31st of March. And the total of those was 33 million. And what they then, because we agreed with them that 32 million could not be declared as expenditure against the vote. Hence, it was a prepayment. With regard to 30 days, Chair, we are not at 100% on this one. We have improved over years. We have set up processes to ensure that all invoices when delivered are attended to timely. But there are still challenges, I must indicate. I'll just give one example. In instances where an invoice is delivered to the department and is delivered to the office of a manager who is supposed to authorize payment, and that manager is not around and there is no one acting in his place, that invoice will wait up until that manager comes. Those are some of the challenges you sometimes encounter. We have been improving, I must say, but we are not there yet. We are not 100%, I must admit. The 240 Justice Mohammed and 260 Justice Mohammed. 240 is the current building we are occupying. 260 is an adjacent building. The Department of Public Works procured the building for us. They signed a lease agreement on our behalf so that we can use that building. But what happened is that there was disagreement between them and the owner of the building. And that delayed everything because on acquisition of that building was supposed to have been refurbished and prepared and be ready for us to occupy. But due to the disagreement which was between them, the refurbishment was delayed. And as a result, we could not take occupation of the building. Of course, they invoiced us and they wanted us to pay for the rent, and we refused to pay because we have not occupied the building. And that resulted in us not spending the allocation for lease payments because we have not occupied the building. You will notice in the previous financial years, the AG raised this matter as an emphasis matter in the previous audit report because they were saying that, as far as they are concerned, it is a material amount. The SDG, should the SDG be used for transport? It's a very important question. The discussions between us and Metros have been such that the issue they are raising, which is also raised by Treasurer, by the way, that human settlements is a broad concept. Human settlements is broad, it's not just housing. And as a result, construction of roads is part of human settlements. Establishment of graves is part of human settlements. And these are the issues which we have continued on discussing with them. And the department, together with the presidency, have partnered on a review process of the USDG. A draft report was published, I think, 2 weeks back. I think it will come to you, Chair, as well when it is finalized. And one of the issues coming out of that report is this issue, that there needs to be certainty in terms of what should USDG fund. What we have found, in fact, it's coming out of the evaluation, is that because the USDG was created to supplement Metro's budget on capital expenditure, they stretch it as much as they can to fund as to supplement anything as they are able to. And what the report is saying is that there needs to be targeting in terms of what is it that USDG should fund. And the researchers are actually indicating that not only should that be, we should also try and ensure that there is alignment between HSDG and USDG, so that they can targeting on what USDG is funding. I think, Chair, by the end of this year, we will probably be able to achieve that. I think that's how I can quote, Chair. Thank you.
Whoever is going to do any action is for 3 minutes. At 4:30, we should be doing the next presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try and repeat. There was a question on how many positions, how many employees were suspended. On page 157 of our annual report, we indicated that we had five officials which were put under precautionary suspension at a cost of 2 million. I will just piggyback on the SMS financial disclosure that we did achieve 85%. Maybe what we need to do is to see where we miss each other with the reporting. In terms of the clarity on the branches, I think it's just, if you look, we've got administration which consists of the office of the DG, the internal audit and corporate services and all those support structures. That's how the administration is being captured. There is a difference between the COO and the CFO, so they remain as independent branches. In terms of, maybe let me just indicate, Ed, where we are now in terms of the 260, just briefly, that we are on the eve of concluding the, not of concluding, of occupying that building, but of course we are dependent on public works. There is only now the certificate of occupation that we are waiting to have. Refurbishments have already been concluded. In terms of the HR plan, there was an HR plan for 5 years. Maybe what should have been reported was that maybe it was submitted late. But also we have since reviewed the plan in order to take into consideration the issues of MTSF going forward. In terms of the vacancy rate, I think those issues is those areas where it depends how you count. They will go straight to PESA, but also we know when we have already concluded the offer with a prospective employee. I will just summarize to say employment equity, it is receiving our attention. We are looking at those figures each and every time when we index on quarterly basis, because we know the importance of meeting employment equity targets. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. As we go to the next presentation, maybe another one question that you forgot to ask you, when are they going to pay back the money? No, we'll go to the next presentation, we'll take you when we do the next presentation. No. Let's take the next presentation so that people can have that presentation, and then when that we discuss it, I can then give you a gap on that discussion. Can we do that? No, I don't even want the clarities now. I want the next presentation. And those clarities will come when we have discussed the next presentation. I'm just worried about the time.
The next presentation will be quite short. I'm sure members have received the presentation, and the COO, who is in charge of all entities, will take us through. I consider it to be one of your shortest presentation you'll ever have today as your last presentation. It's a very straightforward presentation with very few issues of complications around it. Can I, with your permission, Honorable Chair, hand over to the CEO to do the presentation?
Pleasure.
CEO.
Thank you, Chair Captain. The invitation was for us to talk on the annual report of the SFCON and National Housing Fund. I'm not going to do the infrastructure of the presentation. We have covered, this is the purpose, which also talks to the requirements of the TFMA. Maybe with your permission, Chairperson, I can just zoom into the annual status of these entities. In terms of Tugelisha, maybe let me just start with in piggybacking on the mandate of the Tugelisha that it was meant to facilitate the acquisition and the procurement of housing stock in line with the called right-sizing program in terms of the record of understanding that was signed between the then Minister of Housing and the Association of Mortgage Lenders in 1994. The company was then put under litigation in 2012, which meant that we had to appoint the liquidator, who is Admiral Trust, so that the liquidator will facilitate the process of liquidating the entity. The staff and the assets of the entity that were transferred to the Department of Human Settlements as part of the process. What is currently happening now is that the liquidator is in the process of finalizing the transfer of the knowledge in 2013 that were registered in the name of Tugelisha in Gauteng and in the Western Cape. Then the claims against Tugelisha and by the Eastern Cape contractors that did the work on the chassis 600 and those logo 950 projects also is going to be part of the process that the liquidator, we are expected the liquidator to assist us with. In terms of the end of the 2013 financial year, Tugelisha generated 97,000 as income. They also reported 2 million in terms of investment income, which accrued from the interest that was earned on investment. The total operating cost was 3 million. This also includes the salary of the contract staff, the fees of the service provider, and the property of the transferring of the property. The entity generated at the end of the financial year a loss of 390,000. That is mainly attributed to the property transfer cost. This is just a breakdown of the balance sheet of the assets, where we are recording the assets of 56 million with 10 million liabilities, which leaves the net assets of 45 million. Tugelisha received an unqualified audit report for the financial year under review. The annual report was also tabled in Parliament as part of compliance. The close of the entity, the remaining assets need to be disposed now. This is going forward. The liabilities need to be settled and statements of accounts submitted to the Master of High Court, and the entity will also have to be deregistered in terms of the PFMA. In terms of Safcon, this is also one of our entities which is no longer in operation, which is in the process of being closed. The entity on this slide, I must just highlight that the entity ceased its operations in September 2009. It's also part of Schedule 3A in terms of the PFMA. Its original mandate was to provide exclusive management services in order to normalize the lending process relating to a portfolio comprising of 33,000 properties in possession by the bank and non-performing loans with a value of 1.3 billion for a period of 8 years. So the mandate here was for a specific period 1998 to 2006. Chairperson, I previously alluded to the issue of right sizing, so this specifically refers to the issue of right sizing. In terms of the agreement, the bank resolved to terminate the right sizing in 2006 in line with the agreement, which means now the department is now 100% government-owned. We have already taken a decision as a department to close the entity. Now, we were faced with a situation where, because it was no longer in operation, there was no income that was coming to this entity. As a result, then the liabilities exceeded the available resources. For example, on Pepperstein, we had the issues of the income tax that we thought we were going to get an approval from National Treasury so that they are exempted. And that, unfortunately, did not happen, which meant then Servcon had to pay the 56.7 million as part of the income tax. This is part of the delays in the processing, in the closure of the Servcon, because as a department, we had to step in and find a way of how to assist this entity. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, that the debt that refers to the income tax SARS has already been paid in full. And also, we had three contractors which were not paid, which we had to deal with, and those have already been settled. This is part of the plan that was provided, was proposed by the National Treasury, that in order for us to address the issues of liabilities, that fund should consider disposing assets. I have already spoken to this head of you. Then, which meant then we had to look at one of our entities, which is the HDA, because part of these assets, we had to make sure that they are not lost within the human settlement sector. So what HDA had to do here was to look at the database and then see which properties are still suitable for human settlement development, so that HDA in particular land then will acquire that. So as a result, then seven properties were sold to the HDA. The remaining 25 properties have been categorized and are in the process of being disposed through the HDA. What we are expecting here to happen, Chairperson, is that in cases where these land parcels or these assets, where we are in agreement that they are no longer suitable for human settlements purposes, then we will then look at disposing them to the open market. What we have done thus far is that currently the entity has advertised the plan to close from the 17th of August to 17th of November 2014. After which then an application will be made to the Master High Court for liquidation. As a result, the financial and the staffing challenges of the entity was not able to table the annual report for the 2012-13. This is important to note, Chairperson. Under cell phone, we do have the skeleton staff, but based also on the financial constraints that resulted to this to this situation. But we have since received a later date of an approval that they will table their annual reports by the end of next month, 2014. Moving to the National Housing Fund. This is the entity which remains dormant. Both provinces and the municipalities applied for the funding of housing projects, which was granted as loans. Let me just zoom into the issues of the financial. I think it will be proper for me to speak to the bullet two. That in line with the provisions of the Act, which is the above Act, Housing Act 1997, the funds allocated for housing development were transferred from the national vote to the National Housing Fund. Now, the funds that were not utilized remained in the fund and did not revert back to the fiscal. So this is the situation that we have under this entity system. I have already mentioned that the entity remains dormant. Maybe the main
point to emphasize here is the third bullet, which talks to the MINMEC approval for the establishment of the National Housing Fund. During November 2003, the National Housing Fund was delisted from Schedule 3A of the PFMA. I think it's safe to say, Chairperson, that this is a dominant entity that needs to be deregulated going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Maybe before I probably open to honourable member to ask questions of clarity, can you confirm that the companies or whatever I call them, that contractors that probably work under Selfcoin to Medisha, they have all been settled? So that as you wind up, we just wanted that clarity. We have for the reasons why you are asking that question. And maybe just clarify then that fund that is sitting at the National Housing Fund at the NHF, which is not dormant. We understood what you were saying, but they're not going to happen to that fund. That's for my second point. Those two. And then probably then I'm going to ask the board members to ask for platters of questions. And so that we then have that understanding. Yeah. I'm looking for hands. And anybody who is sleeping and then remember later to raise their hand, I'm not going to take. Honorable Papa, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Baker.
Thank you, sir. First, I think I'm not convinced that the National Housing Fund was done during the time of. Was established during the Fairfoot in 1956. I suspect it's 1996, but your document is taken. Is correct. Then, secondly, it's linked to what the chair was saying, that now those gains by those contractors. Were they or are they going to be paid by the department? How are they going to settle it?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for preempting the question. you see, DG and the acting COO is the COO. Oh, and the COO. And the Chair. You see, we've been sitting with this matter. One of the matters that we dealt with as this new committee. Each of the instigates. There seems to be this said this didn't do this, and I was going to mention it at the end of the meeting, but you know God works in serious ways. This issue of this case of the Eastern Cape, I mean, did you know this matter has been ongoing for a long time? I think around 96. The best thing or some of them. And I want to check whether these claims and the liabilities of two militia, when you consider the liabilities of two militia, are you referring to these claims? Or if these claims were to be accepted, then the liabilities for two militia might increase. I think the second one was asked in terms of the money. In the fund, but I need to understand this one, and maybe the question to you here: when are we disposing of this matter? And you not send an email on this matter, please, Chair. We need to assist.
The right question at the wrong time, but the right question, but at the wrong time. But noted.
It's in the report.
Yeah, Honourable Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still trying to phrase it. I'm concerned about the title deeds, the deed transfers with Servcon. Were there still outstanding deeds that were still being processed? I had information previously that Servcon had, since its inception, had verified 300,000 deed transfers. Was that accurate? Do they fulfill their mandate with regards to the deed transfers?
in the period that they were in existence? And what was the reason to decide to close Surfbun? What were the factors around it? Thank you.
Chairperson, let me indicate that the questions in relation to the National Housing Fund will be responded to by our acting CFO as a government entity. In terms of whether all the contractors have they been paid or not, I've made reference to the SEFCON to say we have now advertised our intentions. Now, during that period, whoever has got a claim against the entity, we are expecting that those entities will then come forward. But as far as we know, we don't have those. We dealt with the ones that we had, that were reported to us, that were not outstanding. In terms of the Tubelisha, Chairperson, Tubelisha is, when it comes to the contractors, it's a bit complicated issue because there were a lot of subcontracting that went around that. Maybe with your permission, Chairperson, we can address that as a separate matter. I know that we are unpacking in terms of which claims are legitimate as it stands, which need to be paid, and which ones need further investigation before then the payment could be authenticated. At a later season could be made. There are issues, for example, where in terms of the subcontracting, now the claims are made in particular against the Eastern Cape office, where there was no contractual arrangement. But I think to sum it up, Chairperson, I think this is the issue that we can come at a later stage just to unpack how far we've gone with in resolving those issues. In terms of the issue of the title deed, with your permission, Chairperson, I think we can just confirm the numbers of the title deed as part of this process when we're going forward with the closure process. I think while I'm taking through, with your permission, ACTCFO could attend to the Social Housing Fund.
The National Housing Fund was indeed established in 1966. At the time when it was established, there were 4 provinces in the country. And there were 4 funds linking to the National Housing Fund. Municipalities applied for funding. There were no transfers made to provinces. And when democracy came, the 4 provincial funds were closed down, and 9 new funds were established, but the National Housing Fund remained. And what used to happen is that money would be allocated by Treasury to the National Department. Then the National Department would take the money and put it into the National Housing Fund. And it stays there. And if it's not spent, it does not go back to fiscal, because it's out of the vote. And it would stay there as it is currently, that there is still some money which is still remaining there. The money is with the Reserve Bank, and Treasury uses it to address the, as part of the PMG accounts, to address reduction of drawings which they have to do to fund the budget. What we have to do, we have to amend the Housing Act and close it. What we have done so far, we have delisted it. It's no longer listed in the PFNA. Currently, it's there, but not listed in the PFNA. We have to amend the Housing Act and delist it. Unfortunately, because of the changes from housing to human settlements, and there was a decision that instead of amending the Housing Act, we should work towards a new Human Settlements Act. And when that means new human settlements comes into effect, it will do away with the Housing Act, and then that will then address the National Housing Fund. We had a lot of debates in the department. Some are of the view that maybe we should just amend the Housing Act while we are working towards the Human Settlements Act, so that we can deal with things like the Housing Fund and close it down. But those are the issues. But in the meantime, it still remains a dormant entity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm so excited. that's the information that we have. Is there anything that you want to say? They have covered everything. Thank you very much. This last presentation, even though we thought that's a minor presentation, but it has helped us with a major issue that we are sitting with, Honorable Ghana. And with the department saying the villages as a separate issue, I will even give them the date when they must come before they leave to come and update us. We have just discussed now with the table when they must come, so we will do that. But thank you very much for this presentation. It's been a very long but fruitful day. There's a lot that we have managed to learn out of the whole process. And I don't think there's anything else now that we want to ask from the department from this input. So I would really release them just before we formally close our meeting, so that then they are left just to deal with minor issues and announcements before we go. But thank you very much, Bishop.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members, for allowing us an opportunity to present our annual report. I'm sure we'll meet to work again at IDAMA this week. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members. There's no major things that we just want to comment about. One is just to say, please forward your comments and maybe some things that you as recommendations to the Executive Secretary, because next week, Tuesday, on the 1st, we will be looking at the draft report, on our draft report as the committee. So that mainly what the agenda of next Tuesday would be. And then the Tuesday after, which would be the 28th, the minister would be coming to the portfolio committee to report on the 100-day program, remember. So what then we will do is to anything that is relating to the minister will be dealt with on the 28th. So anything that is relating to will be dealt with on the 28th. That includes this report that we want from the department. Will have to come that day as well, brief us on the Nelson Mandela subcontractor. So we will just let them start that day, deal with the department minutes. That will be the 28th. So I just wanted you to know that next Tuesday we'll be dealing with. But Honourable Members, I just wanted to also inform you that during lunch, the House Chair, who deals with portfolio committees, has spoken to me around the issue of Indaba, and he is only allowing 3 members of the portfolio committee to go to Indaba, including myself. That means, in essence, therefore, there will be one person from the majority party and one person from the major opposition party going. That means, because Honorable Ghana had already indicated that is not available, so Honorable Kwata will be going from the major opposition party, and Honorable Khapa will be going from the African National Congress and myself. And because they are looking, because they are saying only about a month or 2 months ago, the entire committee went to the same thing, so they are looking at the financial implications. So I just wanted the committee to know that. But I am also open to say anybody else who, because most of us travel to Joburg, if you feel that you want to go to Indaba, you can. We are not going to take anybody from the list. So if you feel like for instance, Honorable Shalembe is in Joburg and he wants to attend, he can. Honorable Memezi lives in Joburg, he will be going with his own ticket, he can. Honorable Baker goes via Joburg to Mpumalanga, she can go if she wants. But the only thing is that the logistically, it will not be catered for by the government. That's all we are saying. And we are not stopping anybody else to go. So that's what I wanted the guard to be set here formally, so that nobody doesn't understand what has changed, why now not everybody is going. He just phoned well on, like around about 1 or 2, and he said, that's why we have not been communicating, because initially they had refused totally for anybody to go. So we've been trying to negotiate. So until now, this is not the day that I'm that only 3 months ago. Thank you very much. Hola, Buka.
Thanks, Chair. Just a request for the meeting of the 28th, considering that we'll be dealing with two big matters that maybe we can start at 9 and schedule it to finish at 1. Because otherwise, you know, one of the things that we complain about at the breakaway is the time allocated to the meeting. So if we can consider that, we start at 9 and then we close at 1 just in time to make it to the PR, so that at least 4 hours of conversation. Thanks, Chair.
Yes. That will be the meeting of 28th. We start at 9 and we finish at 1. Thank you very much. And also, Honorable Ghana, the oversight visit that we are looking at, I know that's what you raised when we were dealing with the annual report, but the oversight visit will be targeting Limpopo province because of the challenges that we have seen. So we are looking at all those things, but they are tied together. Thank you very much.